Okay, where are we?
Ha! There we are.
Hey.
Hey.
Hello. We can hear you.
Ah, yeah, and we can
Yeah.
hear you
Yeah,
very
very
well.
well.
Oh, that's
Can
good.
you try again?
Test? Is that better?
Yeah, that's
Yeah,
good.
much
Much
better.
better.
Great.
Great. How's the picture?
Good. Good, I
It's
think.
good?
Great.
Oh, great.
Try a screen share.
Yeah.
Yeah. The comment from the audience is it looks like you're doing a podcast. So
That was the intention,
Yeah.
to be honest. Okay.
Well, it will be quite hard to jump over just for a quick local visit.
Does that work?
Yes. Yes.
Ah, perfect.
Great. Okay. No, not too. Yeah. Okay. So we are back 5 minutes before start of the meeting.
I think we have another 30 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Okay.
Okay. See you then.
See ya.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Open the doors.
Hello, can you hear us?
Yes, very well.
Ah, that's yeah. Fine. Hello. Should we start, or do we wait for anyone?
Nobody there? Your mic is still off.
There. Hi, Sasha and Dennis.
Hello.
Is Wayne. This is Wayne. I'm just at the podium to. So, are you ready to go? I think everyone is
ready.
Okay.
Great. Hi, Wayne, and thanks for the small little introduction. Okay, let's start. That's perhaps a good idea. So cheers to Kansas, from the heart of Germany, to be exact, from Göttingen, Lower Saxony. I'm Dennis Mönch. I'm with GBV for 5 years now. My first folio flower was Goldenrod. Honeysuckle was the first release I deployed to the new Kubernetes cluster I established here. I'm here with my colleague Sascha Dietrich, and we will present a brief overview of our Eureka implementation experience to date.
Everything's fine, continue.
Okay. For the handful amongst you who may not be familiar with the German library networks, let me give you a brief overview of who we are and how we host Folio. The Common Library Network, or GBV, is a library consortium of seven German federal states. I won't mention every of them. You can read it on my slide. Yes, thank you. One of our network comprises over 590 member libraries, academic and public libraries, as well as research institutions. We manage around 190 million holding records and are part of the Union Catalog K10 Plus, which we operate jointly with the Southwest German Library Consortium SWB. As a central service provider for cataloging, library automation and library management systems, we serve Northern and Central Germany.
Not too far.
Yeah. Yes, I think that it's not necessary to read every of these numbers to you, but perhaps it's important to mention if we are ready with our migration to Eureka, we will have over 200 production instances in our cluster. Our technical infrastructure runs entirely on premise and on dedicated hardware. The core consists of a Kubernetes cluster with 10 servers, complemented by a Postgres cluster of 3 servers, plus one witness server and an OpenSearch Kafka cluster with 3 servers also. All systems are interconnected with a 10 gigabit Ethernet connection. There are some numbers you might be interested in. Just download the slides if you need this for your things. And now I hand over to my colleague.
So how did the early adopters program for Eureka actually start? And the initial situation was that Eureka was primarily developed and deployed on AWS by EBSCO and we had the situation that in order to get some acceptance in the community, we needed a more general deployment approach independent of AWS, and this was the initial idea behind the early adopters program, to get some early adopters and App Store together to figure out how to deploy Eureka in a more general environment, which started this year in January. So how did we actually all start in this? We have a central document that describes in a step-by-step way how to set up Eureka in a Kubernetes environment. I hope I can read it. This is basically a big step-by-step guide, but you can split it up in four general steps or milestones: the base services, your Postgres, your Kafka services, then the Eureka deployment with the actual managed applications and the functional modules from Folio. Then after that, the tenant setup, and finally the Stripes build. And I want present basically some experience, some pitfalls that we encountered for all of these four steps in our early adopter experience. So to start with the base services, setting up Postgres is pretty much following the standard guide. Thank you. The standard guide, what we will point out at this point is that you should increase the max connections from the default value, which is, I think, 100. In our production environment, we set it to 2000 with in our experience, about 1,300 concurrent connections in a high load situation in live environment. So definitely increase this number. So for Keycloak, when you set up Keycloak, there is a Folio specific Docker image being used for Keycloak. So be sure to use that. And when you set up this deployment, make sure that you provide the environment variables as depicted in the installation guide. So the initial admin user is created when you spool up a Keycloak, otherwise you're getting trouble later. Then for vault setup, you can use the default HashiCorp Docker image, but and this is very crucial that you remember this. After you set up the vault and you initialize and unsealed it, you need to create a very specific secret inside a vault that the Folio components and manager applications later use. If you don't create this secret in the way that is specified in the guide, you will run into trouble with the manager applications. When it comes to Kafka, very important is that if you use a version pre 4.0, so 3.9 for example, make sure that you deploy the Zookeeper component as well. Kafka will go up without the Zookeeper component, and actually from my memory, the managed applications will not complain about it being missing, but you will later get to trouble in the tenant entitlement phase, because there are certain topics not being created and consumed. So be sure the Zookeeper is there as well. And for OpenSearch, you can use the default OpenSearch image that you can get on the network and the net. Here's to be said, OpenSearch in the Folio environment requires a set of plugins to be enabled. I've written a guide in the installation guide how to do what these plugins are and how to enable them. So follow that instruction. And last but not least, the COM component, the RP gateway. Also there's a Folio specific image, so be sure to use that. Otherwise, it's just follow the guide. So once you've done that, your deployments are running, they are not crash looping. You get to the actual phase of creating the platform, the platform deployment. And the first thing you will touch is the manager applications. There are three of them: manager applications itself, manager tenants, and manager tenant entitlements. You can follow the guide pretty much on how to set them up, but I really highly recommend after deploying them that you check the container logs even for suspicious warnings and hopefully no errors, that you look into Kafka that after deployment that they create a Kafka topics, otherwise your connection to Kafka might be faulty, that you look into Keycloak that the, each of the manager applications will create a client inside the master RAM for itself. If that client is not being created, you have a problem with your Keycloak connection and you should fix that before continuing. And last but not least, Be sure to check that Kong roots are actually created. So when you go to your Kong URL, your Kong API /tenants, for example, you should get an empty list of tenants provided by the manager tenants applications. If you don't get a route there, then there's a problem with your Kong communication between your manager applications and your Kong deployment. So if that works, you get to the step of actually selecting your applications that you want to deploy. So you actually need to make a selection of it, which apps you want. I will later go into more detail on this. Do your application selection and deploy them according to the guide. Then comes the module discovery. This is pretty much the same as you use from Okapi, with a little and important difference. When you provide the URL for the module, you need to point it to the sidecar of the module. So the four ports 8082. If you don't do that, it will not give you will not complain, but you will get very confusing error messages in the tenant entitlement phase. So make sure that the location is pointing to the 8082 port. And last but not least, then you deploy the modules. And here it is very important that in Eureka, the discovery for a module needs to happen first. The sidecar of the module needs the discovery to be there and manage applications. Otherwise, it won't come up and your deployment will crash loopback. So once you have done that, you can get to, let's see, where do I actually get my application descriptors? And there I want to point you towards the URL that Craig McNally also mentioned yesterday, the platform LSP. And if you go there and you just get a GitHub repository, you need to select under text one of the folio releases. For example, as I pointed here, Remsen CSP 6. And when you select that, you can get an install application JSON. And this list gives you the default applications for this folio release with their, and most importantly, with their version number for this release. And for example, in this example, platform minimal 4041. So what you do then is to go to GitHub again. There is a repository for each of these applications, example folio.org /at platform minimal, and there you go to tags and download the application descriptor for the version that you need. And this is how you get your application descriptors. So once you've done that, and you did your application deployment, app descriptor deployment, how do we actually get to the modules? Where are my YAMLs that I need to deploy them actually? And this is a bit more convoluted, but EBSCO provides in their shared pipelines library some sample configurations. If you follow these links here, you will get a set of YAMLs. You have to select one, for example, a testing YAML. This is the default values for each deployment in a testing environment, and when you open this YAML, you get for each of the modules in Folio a set of default environment variables, and you take these and combine them with one of these charts in this repository. There you can download Helm charts for each of the modules in Folio, and you combine those and do using Helm template. You generate a deployable YAML for each of the modules, basically. And I have to point out, this is very important, you're using default values here. You need to change and adjust the received YAML file and the voice in there to according to your needs. And also very important, these Helm charts create more than just a module and sidecar deployment. There are, for example, services in there, and very important, a system user secret. And this secret dictates to the module whether it's actually living in an Okapi environment or in a Eureka environment. So what you need to do is you need to deploy this secret and assign it to the environment variables of your module deployment. Otherwise, you get errors in the sidecar on tenant entitlement. This is very important. So once you've done this, you have your module deployments, they are not crash looping every 30 minutes. You can go to the next step. This is the tenant setup. And what you then do is, according to the guide, pretty straightforward, you create a tenant, you do the tenant entitlement according to the guide, and then you add your admin user. Just basically the same process as you would do with a copy, but this is very important. The tenant entitlement process process is probably the most finicky step in this whole endeavor. And usually, if you get an error there, you need to look at the whole stack of your platform, from the base services up to the module sidecar and the module and sidecar logs, to understand what is happening. So do yourself a favor and set up your environment so you have an easy access to the logs of each of these components, because logs pass you will. You need to look everywhere to understand, okay, what is going wrong in this situation. And you need to be able to think around some corners with some of the error messages to understand what actually went wrong. But given that this happens, that you successfully entitle a tenant, some apps to a tenant, you are over the peak. From now on, you can go smooth sailing, because the last step is just a Stripe build, which you then deploy, and then you have your usable tenant. And thankfully, the building the Stripes is pretty much the same as with Okapi. Other than a few changes in the Stripes config and Dockerfile, every mention of Okapi needs to be replaced with Kong. And if there's something dealing with authentication, you need to point it towards Keycloggers in this example. Plus, there are some variables that you need to set. First off, you need to tell the Stripes that it's actually an Eureka Stripes, so is Eureka needs to be true. And if you're using an ECS environment, you need to set this to true, and probably, I'm not really certain on this, is single tenant to false. And the tenant options, this is a very important line, otherwise you will not get a proper login interfaces, or you get an empty page when you access the Stripes. You need these tenant options. It needs to be provided in this form. In this example, Deku is the name of our test tenant. And it is important, this client ID part. This client ID is built, needs to be composed by the tenant name and the content of the KC-login client suffix environment variable in manager tenants. And what happens is that when you create a tenant, the manager tenants creates a client in Keycloak and a login in a secret in Vault for this name. For example, in this example, Deku login application. This needs to be there. If this is not there, then some communication between tenants, manager tenants, and your Keycloak or Vault didn't work, and you need to redo the whole tenant creation process after fixing, of course, why the communication didn't work. But this basically, if you go through this and it doesn't fail, you then have a usable tenant where you can log in using Keycloak and get to your portfolio instance. So from our perspective, where are we actually with the current Eureka adoption process? This far, we have successfully created a Eureka Sunflower installation that currently mimics the AWS deployment. But for us, this is not a production ready setup, because Eureka currently is not able to host multiple different versions of the same module. For example, modules 111 and 112. They can't live together in the installations. You can only have one. And this limits us, because we are not able to gradually update tenants in our setup step by step. It's either all or nothing. It limits us in our ability to actually do development on modules, because we can't have different versions of a module living parallel and activating them to select tenants. And we also have a problem with functionality assurance testing. So we cannot have a tenant in the production environment that we singularly update, for example, to a new flower, and then do some tests that in the production environment everything is working correctly. But currently EBSCO is working on these parts. There are two tickets. One is close to finishing, the other is still in the works and is slated for Sunflower CSP2. So we hope this is resolved soon. And if this is resolved, we are optimistic that then we are in the situation that we can create a production ready tenant. So what are the lessons learned? What should you take with you on this whole thing? First off, if you deploy Eureka in the future, plan enough time. don't take this easy. One does not simply install Eureka on a Friday afternoon. It doesn't work. It takes the time that you need to do this. Further, you should familiarize yourself with the new structure of Eureka and know where what happens and where you need to look in the logs when something a step fails. You should also reflect on your own environment and the needs of your environment, especially if you have something very specific to your local environment that you need to take care of. And last but not least, document your progress and if you can share it with us. Because I feel if you're looking back at the discussion yesterday with EBSCO and Craig McNally about the documentation process, it is actually quite difficult to define something like a general purpose deployment strategy. And the solution will probably be that hopefully a lot of people share their way to deploy Eureka, and that is then becomes a library for everyone to use. I want then to use this opportunity to thank the members of the EBSCO KitFox teams, especially LDR, Vasily and Oleksiy, who spent quite a long night with us hacking through some very annoying errors. And I want to thank you for your attention. And then we will take questions from here on. Huh?
Is there anything in the chat? No.
I see yeses.
I don't see any questions. You don't know me, but I'm just kind of stepping in.
Thank you.
At time, but I also don't see any hands raised. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I raised my hand. Is can you hear this?
Oh, this is Ingolf.
Can you hear this?
Yes,
yes.
Ingolf, we hear you.
Hey.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Great talk. I'm still wondering about the migration plans. And if you deploy a Sunflower version, how do you want to migrate? Because in Sunflower, you don't have Sunflower yet. You have Ramsons in production.
Actually, we have Casnelia.
Yeah, actually, we are on Casnelia at the moment, yes. Ingolf, we do it step by step. First, we want to have a production-ready platform, and we solve the problems when we have them.
I guess this also greatly depends on what EBSCO will still release on the actual migration plans.
Yeah.
If I have to guess something, we will first try to reach Okapi Ransoms or Okapi Sunflower, depending on what's happening, and then do the crossover to the to a Eureka platform.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So my original plan was to do that in Ransoms because originally, there's no Okapi and Sunflower.
Originally not. Yes, you're right. But we will see. Perhaps we will have Sunflower.
Maybe one other question. Okapi. If I have a platform minimal with some snapshots version, how complicated is it to go to a released version? Do I have to do everything again, or can I just upgrade without data?
The general hint is from EBSCO, don't downgrade modules in version. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you should be perfectly fine with just replacing the apps. Okay. So if you need to change apps, basically, you need to unentitle the app that you want to remove from all tenants in your installation, mm-hmm. and then re-entitle them with or deploy the new version that you want to use, and then entitle all the tenants again. So they should be switchable.
I will try. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you, Ingolf.
Yep. Hello. My name is Oleksiy. I'm a team lead from Erika team. First of all, I want to say you many thanks for your feedback. It was also useful for us. And I want to confirm that the functionality that allow us to deploy multiple versions of module for on the same installation will be in service patch, so it's currently in progress, current sprint, so it will be ready. My question is next. You mentioned that it's pretty hard to read logs and get a feedback from manager services, like manager tent entitlement. So do you have an understanding or vision how we can improve it? So what are you expecting to see in manager services to make your life easier? Thank you.
This is actually one of these questions. If the answer were obvious, you would have already done it. I think also Craig already mentioned this in one of the early adopters meetings. The error messages are sometimes quite opaque. You can guess what the problem is once you know or follow the rabbit hole deep enough into the infrastructure, and then you see, okay, there's something went wrong, and then I can guess, okay, this has to be fixed. I suggest look at your error messages, see that they are more verbose on what is actually going wrong. What did it try and where did it fail? If I had to do one suggestion what to improve at this point.
Okay.
If I can interject here, I see there are a number more questions, but we're already 5 minutes into the next session.
Oh,
so I hate to cut it off and I hate to interject myself here.
If you still have questions, mail us. We will gladly answer everything that you send to us.
Thank you.
You see, you find our mail address on the first slide and you can contact us whenever you want. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thank you for your attention. Bye. Okay.
Hello, everyone. My name is Vanessa French. I'm the Associate University Librarian for Library Access and Collection Management at Lehigh University. And this presentation is about our recent Folio to Banner integration to streamline invoice payments with our accounts payable department. So before we get started, I wanted to talk a little bit about what we were doing before so you get an understanding of why we implemented this integration. So prior to the integration, our acquisitions team would create an invoice in Folio, and then they would email our administrative services group, ASG, who would then sign the invoices and submit them for payment to the accounts payable department. We would get payment confirmation on transaction detail reports that we were getting somewhat inconsistently, maybe every month, month and a half. And then while the process was working, we felt like there was certainly some room for improvement. Okay. So what were the main goals of this integration? So primarily, we wanted to create efficiency. In the previous system, there were a lot of emails going back and forth between ASG and the library acquisitions team, so it was challenging to know what had been done by other people. Additionally, there were staffing changes in ASG that made the acquisitions team had to adjust their workflows. So when a new ASG member took over the invoice processing, she preferred to get like a daily list of all the emails, and then there was also confusion about what fund to use for what. So it wasn't the most efficient. So we were looking for a system that would work regardless of staffing changes and would get us out of the dependency on emails. Another inefficient part of our workflow was that after the invoice was submitted, there was little to no feedback until the transaction detail report was received. Yes. God damn it. That means you got to see my notes, which is just extra helpful, right? Yeah. Okay, is that better? Great. Okay. So another inefficient part of the workflow was that after the invoice was submitted, there was little to no feedback until the transaction report was received. So if a vendor contacted us about a late payment, we had to contact the ASG unit to get some information about the status. Additionally, when it came to the fiscal year rollover, we would often receive a transaction detail report a month after the rollover, and it was hard to tell which fiscal year things got charged to, and sometimes they didn't get charged to the one we had hoped it would be. So then, okay. And then the other thing we were hoping to achieve is reducing errors. So in the previous way, the acquisitions team was creating invoices in Folio, and then ASG was recreating invoices in Banner, and sometimes things would go wrong. The wrong amount would be paid, the wrong fund code would be charged, and that would require us to all have to do things after the fact to resolve the issue. Or again, sometimes it would come out of the wrong fiscal year. So there's just a lot of extra work to try to fix those errors. So before we implemented this integration, we had some specific requirements that we had to meet, we had to include in the integration before we could proceed. So first, our accounts payable office required invoices to be approved for payment by our ASG business manager. In the previous system, that approval was denoted by a signature on the invoice, but it was determined that other methods of denoting the approval would work. It also required that the approval had to go with the invoice itself into Banner, so the approved by function in Folio wouldn't be sufficient because that approved note in Folio didn't get transmitted to Banner with the invoice. So from a process standpoint, we also needed a way to correct human errors in Folio so that our budget information in Folio would match reality. And I think that's pretty much, you know, I think any system needs to be able to fix it if you screw up, essentially. Okay. So we needed a way to bypass the integration also. Okay. So what does our new integration look like? Okay. Before we could implement the integration, we had some prep work to do. First, every fund in Folio needed an external account number that corresponded to the Banner accounts. This ensures that the money is deducted from the correct account once it hits Banner. Luckily, we had just redone our ledger structure like a year before, and that gave us a good opportunity to make sure that external account number was an alias in, or an external account number in every fund. So also, every organization in our Folio environment that we're using as a vendor required a Banner ID, meaning a unique identifier that matched the unique identifier in Banner. And that needed it as an alias in the Folio organization. So this ensures that the payment is issued to the correct entity. We also discussed how to bypass the integration as needed, whether to fix payment issues in Folio or to document things that were paid with procurement cards that didn't need to go through Banner. Ultimately, we decided to bypass the using the payment method feature on the invoice. So if the payment method is other or credit card, it doesn't get sent into the Banner integration. So the first step of the workflow is similar to before, where the acquisitions team create an order in Folio, but now they're careful to keep the invoice in an open status while working on the invoice and only changing it to the reviewed status when it is ready for payment. They're also careful to populate the payment method portion of the as credit card or other if they need to bypass the system. Next, the team member logs into an Illusion workflow document upload utility. The workflow utility makes a Folio API call to populate a drop-down menu of invoices that have a reviewed status in Folio. The acquisition team selects the correct invoice and uploads the PDF of the vendor invoice that has been provided. The utility will then send the invoice to the ASG business member or business manager for approval. So that's how we're getting to that approval step that was required. After the work, the invoice is approved in the workflow utility, the Illusion workflow makes another Folio API call to add both the PDF of the invoice and a PDF of the log of the approval, saying this person approved this invoice at this time, that will accompany the PDF of the actual invoice into Banner. Thus, again, getting to that approval aspect that our accounts payable required. Then that same business manager will log into Folio and changes the invoice status in Folio from reviewed to approved. Okay. At 6 p.m. every day, an API call checks for invoices in the approved status and then submits them to Banner. Okay. A few minutes after 6 p.m. every day, the acquisition team members get a summary email of all the invoices submitted to Banner and whether they were successful or not. If there are invoices with errors, corrections can be made in Folio and it'll try again at 6 p.m. the next day. If the invoice submission is successful, the invoice status will be changed from approved to paid, and it will write the Banner invoice number into a notes field in Folio. Okay. So after we started this implementation, there were a few adjustments that needed to be made. Okay, so first, one adjustment that we needed to do is increase the capacity of the number of invoice line items that were being submitted. The initial implementation had only 10 line items that were submitted at a time, and it turned out that went really bad really quickly. So our developers made some changes and adjusted the upper limit to 250, which should be above our biggest EBSCO journal renewal invoice. Additionally, we developed a process to get LIN IDs into LIN IDs created for new vendors. So we did a lot of work, like I said, in the pre-implementation to add LIN IDs to our organizations in the Folio app that we have consistently paid for years. But anytime we decide to buy something new from someone we've never purchased before, for the integration to work, we will need a LIN ID. And the previous method of getting the LIN ID was saying, here's an invoice, go pay it. And that was the creation. So we had to add an extra step where we submit information to accounts payable for them to generate a LIN ID for us to create the Folio organization to then submit the invoice for payment. There were also some adjustments in the human workflow. So now our acquisitions members need to check the organization entries in Folio to confirm the presence of a LIN ID. While we did prep work looking for this before the integration, we've had a few duplicate organizations basically when we migrated from our previous system to this one. So for example, we have like 9 different entries for Gobi based on like whether we paid continuations or books or, you know, and we definitely had a LIN ID for at least one of them. But it turns out sometimes the wrong organization gets selected and then it pops out an error that there isn't a LIN ID. We've also added the step of uploading the invoice to the document utility to the approval that we didn't previously have, but we've cut out the step of the constant emails. So it's kind of balanced itself out. There's also an additional step of troubleshooting the error messages that didn't exist before. But mostly those have been LIN ID things, and it's just fix the ID and then it goes through the next day. Another workflow adjustment that we made after the implementation was deciding to take wire payments out of the integration because our accounts payable has an additional form that also has to accompany wire payments. So we just decided that we're going to keep the manual process for those for right now. So now that we've have the implementation up and going, we started this, I would say, end of July. So it's been a few months since we started. There are some improvements that we would like to see. So having more information written from Banner into the Folio invoice after payment would be helpful. So right now, when the invoice is accepted by Banner, it generates a unique Banner invoice number, and that does get written to Folio, but nothing else gets written. So for example, a week later, when accounts payable issues the check, Like, it would be great if it also wrote the check number. So if a vendor calls me in a week and says, where's our money? We can say a check was issued on Thursday and it's this number. Do you have it? Getting that information still requires actually contacting the administrative services group and requesting it. So the other thing is for the payment method of the invoice, we are populating it with something, but the truth is most of the time we don't know how the payment will be issued, how our accounts payable will decide to make, how they will decide to issue payment. So it would be great if after the payment is issued, it also updated that drop-down menu with the reality of the situation. Okay, that's it. Yes.
Okay, can you hear me now? Actually, I have dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of questions.
Great.
Part of which is because one of the things on my to-do list is to translate these mod APIs into edge APIs to make that a little bit easier to manage. So yep. Requirements gathering here. My first question is, you're using payment method to determine whether it gets transmitted or not.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a reason you chose not to examine the export to accounting status?
I'm not sure we were aware of that one.
Yeah, there's a checkbox export to accounting, which is if you're using some alternate transmission to output vouchers, mm-hmm. namely via FTP, Folio looks at that to generate the FTP file. But I was just curious why that wasn't examined for this process.
The only other conversation I remember having is about the status of the invoice itself. And we determined that we couldn't use the status of the invoice because it was impossible to skip the approved step. Like, we had already decided that the approved step would be the trigger to send it for the integration to send the invoice. And since it was impossible to go from a reviewed to paid status without skipping that step, that's the reason that wasn't selected. I don't believe we examined the export to external accounting.
Okay. And then my other question is, can Banner generate the check number and the date the check was issued?
They definitely have that information in it, but it doesn't happen until it has happened. Like, I think our accounts payable sends information, like sends checks like once a week, you know?
Right. My question is, does Banner have the capability of outputting that information in a way that we could write for Folio to consume it via API?
I would imagine they do. I would not be the person to ask about that. I think the reason we haven't looked into that so far is because after an invoice gets the paid status, it's challenging to make further edits to it, but I wouldn't be 100% on that one.
I can make those changes.
Great.
Well, I'm joking, yeah. But yeah, no, this feedback is good because that's a use case for the invoice is a paid and proved, but you still want to write in a check number. So we can put that in,
yeah.
Either as a custom field or some other field. So that's my question is,
yep.
Do I need to add this?
I would also say we'd have to examine what the trigger is for the call to be made because we don't know when that information will be available. Like, for the current method, we have the 6 p.m. trigger every day. It looks for an invoice in the status. It's marking the status as paid after it enters Banner. I don't know if it is in a complete status, if there's a way for it to make another call like 1 week after it's entered the complete status for, you know, that sort of thing. So again, I'm not the API guy.
For any Banner users, Aaron, that would be interesting to know.
Yeah.
Got one question here from the chat, which is, is there a direct information exchange between Folio and Banner, or is this done by exporting a report which gets sent over to Banner regularly? And then there's a couple comments from the chat also that I'll read out after.
I believe it's an API call and it goes directly. Like, I don't think there's a middle step. of a report that's generated.
Okay. And there's a comment that Cornell uses export to accounting as a trigger to general ledger system. And we have a comment that the University of Chicago is getting the check numbers back from their accounting system via API. It's recorded in the voucher section.
Right. I knew that was possible. My IT guy seems skeptical, but
yeah, and MTSU is manually completing this now. And there's a comment that you can edit the voucher section afterwards. And it would be great if that could be automated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it.
Great. Okay. Any other questions?
Could you say a few more words about the Ellucian workflow step? I tried to do some quick web searches for it, and so, I can't tell if it's an adjunct to Banner or something separate.
It's a part of Banner. We had initially looked at whether we would use DocuSign for the approval process, and our systems engineering people, I think, abandoned that because the Ellucian was already included in the Banner suite that we had, so it was less complicated. That's my understanding, but we did initially consider DocuSign because we had in the previous, the old way, they were physically signing, or they were, you know, there was an actual signature. Now there's a log of approval, not a signature. But the initial thing we looked at was DocuSign, and the Ellucian workflow was determined to be the better solution. Great. Well, thank you, everyone. Hopefully this wasn't too painful for... It was a little painful for me, I'm not going to lie. Okay. Good. Okay. All right. Well, I don't...